Good morning. Thank you, everyone, for joining all of us so that we could be here together as present as we can possibly be as we're able. It's nice to see everyone. Is there anyone who has come in and is new who I haven't welcomed yet? I'm just going to look here. Doesn't seem that way. So this is a time where, if you'd like, you can check in the chat and say hello to everyone. If you want, share a word or two about where you're zooming in from or your state of mind. Your state of weather, just any little thing to connect if you'd like. We have a few minutes now. You could also stretch and get comfortable. So I'm going to look at the chat and see if anybody has checked in yet. I see a few new faces. They look kind of new to me. Lori, are you new to us? No? Good morning from Madison Park, Seattle. Spring has sprung. Yes, it did feel like it yesterday, I noticed. Two afternoons with sunshine. Very nice. Good morning from West Seattle. Good morning, Julie, my neighbor in West Seattle. Thanks for the meditation, says Nikhil. It's sunny. Where did you go, Nikhil? In Idaho, I think. I don't know where you are. Morning, peaceful. Let's see. Candace is in Wedgwood. Spring is welcome. And Charles is zooming in from Newcastle and happy to be here. Welcome, Charles. And Carol is calm inside and out in Lake Forest Park. And Suze is zooming in from a garden filled with hyacinth and daffodils. I can smell them right now, especially the hyacinth. Greetings from downtown, Meta to all. That must be Nana, because I notice you always have the window looking out to the waterfront, I think. Good morning from sunny Leavenworth. That must be Liz. And let's see if there's anybody else I missed here. Let's see. Morning from the hill, Lydia. And sunny and warm in Boise. Oh, that's great to know. So it's spreading out. We have spring everywhere. We've been waiting for it for a while. It's nice to warm up. Okay, well, good morning, everyone. I'm going to start the talk then, and let's see. Let me just move my screen around so I can see people as I talk. Okay, so for everyone who is new this year, and there doesn't appear to be anybody new to Seattle Insight, but if you've forgotten, or you've been away for a while, we're exploring the Buddhist teaching around transcendental dependent arising. And this month, our focus is the third stage of the sequence, which is joy. And it's been nice for me to do this talk because it's made me think back to my memories of when I began at Seattle Insight. And I started to feel joy for finding the path. So this has been, it's been enjoyable preparation. In the Upanasa Sutta, the image of transcendental dependent arising is the image of water flowing down a mountain. What comes before allows the emergence of what comes after. The Buddha said, he who sees dependent arising sees the Dhamma, and he who sees the Dhamma sees dependent arising. Stage flows into stage. Stage fulfills stage. In this way, the graduated training unfolds organically. It's a natural law of interconnected becoming. And it's the framework behind the Four Noble Truths, the Middle Way, and the path from self to not self. So I like the aspect of the interconnections. Joseph Goldstein summarized transcendental arising in his book One Dharma like this. He said, "We all experience suffering. When faith is born out of suffering instead of bewilderment and despair, it sets in motion a chain of dependent arisings leading through many kinds of happiness all the way to liberation." So I think that's a nice way to look at our year. Many kinds of happiness. That's my first topic. The first kind of happiness in the sequence of transcendental dependent arising is called Pamoja in Pali. Some of us have been associating it with a feeling of gladness. But joy is a personal thing, and so we're taking time to be curious and explore our experiences with joy in its many manifestations: happiness, gladness, contentment, peace, tenderness, love, to name a few. I like what Lyndall suggested in her talk at the beginning of the month. She said, "We can broaden our sense of what joy is and keep our definition wide." For some of us, the word joy might be a loaded word. I know it felt that way to me in terms of Buddhism. That's pretty extreme, we might feel. It's a high bar. Even the Buddha had his doubts about joy and happiness when he had his insight about the middle way to awakening. At first, he noticed that he was afraid of that pleasure. He was coming from several years of ascetic practice, and then he asked himself, why was he afraid of the rapture and bliss born of seclusion? And he realized that this happiness had nothing to do with sensual pleasure or unskillful qualities. And he concluded that there was no reason to fear this wholesome pleasure. As we become more acquainted with the teachings, we realize that pleasure, joy, and contentment in many forms are woven into the path and absolutely necessary for the momentum of our movement toward awakening. And I know that's kind of surprising. It was to me, because it seemed when I started that it was really about understanding suffering and turning towards suffering. So then to find that there were all these little pieces of joy, I didn't accept it at first. But I know the Zen say, there are 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows, and we need both. And it makes me think of the Zen symbol illustrating opposite but complementary yin-yang forces, where one half of the circle is black, the other half is white, but there's a dot of white inside the black and a dot of black inside the white. Everything is moving and interconnected. Joy and sorrow are not isolated concepts in their separate boxes. And actually, to me, that is a joyful way of looking at things, because it helps me not fear sorrow. And it helps me know that even in sorrow, there can be joy somewhere. When we talk about the stages of transcendental dependent arising, suffering to faith, faith to joy, we're talking about a law of interconnected becoming. So we can look at the condition which precedes joy and think about the kind of joy called Pamoja that we associate with the arising of our faith as we entered our spiritual path. Maybe we've been searching for a spiritual path like the ox herder searching for the ox. Through desolate forests and fearful jungles and deep mountain thickets, we've had enough faith to begin the search, but there isn't much confidence yet. That's the way I felt when I started. Greed for worldly gain and dread for loss spring up like searing flames, it says in the ox herding pictures. Ideas of right and wrong dart out like daggers as the ox herder starts on the path. We ask ourselves, could there possibly be another way as we start out? And then we get a glimpse, like the ox herder, we who saw the footprints. We might say that it's a tentative way to see it first. We see it first. What kind of joy is in that glimpse of that tentative way? And how can it carry us forward? So I have an example, and it's called Finding Joy Entering the Path of Practice. Here's my example. I'd been circling around Buddhism for a while when I signed up for the Introduction to Meditation class at Seattle Insight. I'd studied comparative religion in college, and I'd taken a TM course and tried to practice meditating for a while on my own. I'd read some books by Pema Chodron and Sogyal Rinpoche, and I just finished reading Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach for the fourth time. And I had a Buddha statue in my garden. Everything I read about the Dhamma made sense to me to some degree. I didn't understand it all, but I thought, what doesn't make sense to me now, I think, will make sense to me at some point. In other words, everything was resonating. But when I signed up for the Introduction to Meditation class, I was really suffering. I was very worried about someone near and dear to me. Worry and catastrophic thinking filled my mind. As with the ox herder, dread of loss was springing up like searing flames, and I felt like I had depleted my resources. But I still thought there must be another way. So this enters the next kind of joy, the joy of ahipassika. With the Introduction to Meditation class, I started to learn that it wasn't enough to resonate with the goodness and truth of ideas out there. The real transformation from suffering to joy and freedom came from turning inward, and in this way to discover the truth of the way things are through my own direct experience. As Philip Moffat says, the noble truths must be penetrated by one's own insight, by fully understanding. The instruction from the Buddha of ahipassika, see for yourself, that accompanies his instructions on mindfulness meditation, was so important to me. What an invitation, see for yourself. I felt joy in this opportunity at the same time that I felt daunted thinking about the work ahead of me. It was reassuring to read some wise teacher's words insisting that drop by drop, the bucket fills up. I was not the only one who needed reassurance. Drop by drop, glimpse after glimpse, I started noticing a little more happiness, a little more freedom, a little more spaciousness in my life. And I was glad that I'd found a path of practice. There was something I could do that felt right and wholesome. There was a teacher to inspire me. In fact, there were a lot of teachers, starting with the Buddha, who said, if I didn't think you could do this, I wouldn't ask you to do it. There was gladness in seeing that I was learning, just as many others like me had learned and were learning. And when I attended the weekly sits and weekend retreats at Seattle Insight, I was inspired by other Sangha members as they shared their insights. I felt like everyone was a teacher. I was surrounded by teachers, and it was exhilarating. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, when the yogi sees that the hearts of others have been set free, she leaps forward by aspiration, making efforts to attain the unattained, find the unfound, and realize the unrealized. That was another kind of joy I experienced as I started out on the path. The next joy is the joy of bare attention. As I meditated, slowly I began to learn a new way of seeing or knowing. I remember Tim giving one of his talks, one of his first talks to the Sangha on the Bahia Sutta, the Bahia Sutta. This was before Tim became one of our guiding teachers. And in this sutta, Bahia is asking the Buddha to teach him the Dhamma. And the Buddha says to him, here in Bahia, you should train yourself thus. In the seen will be merely what is seen. In the heard will be merely what is heard. In the sensed will be merely what is sensed. In the cognized will be merely what is cognized. In this way, you should train yourself, Bahia. Then when, Bahia, for you in the seen is merely what is seen, in the cognized is merely what is cognized, then, Bahia, you will not be with that. And when, Bahia, you are not with that, then, Bahia, you will not be in that. And when, Bahia, you are not in that, then, Bahia, you will be neither here nor beyond nor in between the two. Just this is the end of suffering. Whoa. I went up to Tim after the talk and said, I don't get it. And it didn't sound very good to me, to not be anywhere. Now I get it a little more than I did then. And I often think of this sutta when I think about my intention to have bare attention. And when I think about not self, anatta, one of the three characteristics. Another kind of happiness that I experienced along with this, even at the beginning of practice, was the unfolding nature of my understanding. I would hear something, and the first time I heard it, I might be quite perplexed. But then I could see that the ideas could rest in a latent state internally for a while, and then suddenly, in a new situation, the connection would pop up, and I'd think, oh, I get it now. That's what that meant. The practice of thinning of the self, our founding teacher's term, and the intention to have bare attention, or to at least see the veil of delusion that my mind created, helped me see more clearly and understand more deeply, and definitely contributed to my sense of well-being. All this validated a feeling that I was going in the right direction. The next joy, developing the joy of simplicity and seclusion from distractions. When I started practicing with the first foundation of mindfulness of the body, it helped me to relax and make more connections between my mind and body. Shortly after I began meditating with Seattle Insight, I attended a weekend Qigong retreat, and I've been practicing Qigong ever since. Mindfulness of the body and Qigong together have helped me appreciate a more subtle, calm kind of joy, which I think supports my sitting practice and helps me settle my attention on the present moment. When I read that Joseph Goldstein's teacher told him, sit and know you are sitting, and the whole of the Dhamma will be revealed, I was awed by the simplicity of that instruction, and I thought, how could that be? The whole of the Dhamma, just from knowing you're sitting? But the more I learn about transcendent dependent arising and other Dhamma teachings, the more I'm starting to understand how this might be possible. My Qigong teacher, when he's introducing a new form, says, have the intention, but don't make it happen. Sometimes during guided meditations, our founding teacher, Rodney, says, do nothing. A natural law is operating which doesn't depend on our individual willpower. For me, this is a relief. When Bhikkhu Bodhi describes how transcendental dependent arising works, he says, in language which is a bit convoluted, each pair of stages intertwines in a mutually vitalizing bond wherein the lower antecedent member nurtures its successor. In short, the training unfolds organically in a fluid progression. The process has its own momentum, which is beyond our personal efforts. When I practice with the Buddha's instructions for mindfulness of breathing, also called anapanasati, I get a sense of this momentum at work. The sequence of 16 instructions is similar to the four foundations of mindfulness in that it moves from focus on the body to focus on feelings, to focus on the mind, to focus on wisdom. Training with accepting the whole body as it is leads to calming, leads to joy, and leads to dispassion towards mental activities like dispassion towards thoughts or emotions or opinions or judgments, all which I'm normally very susceptible to and identified with. I've noticed how practicing with each stage, though, feels like it's building my capacity to experience the next stage. I have the intention to accept, to calm, to feel joy, but I don't make it happen. It just happens. I think it's like Tawari says, I cultivate the conditions to make things happen. The Anapanasati instructions start with establishing mindfulness to the forefront, always attentive. I breathe in with mindfulness and breathe out with mindfulness. But sometimes I lose mindfulness. And when I lose mindfulness, I begin again. Drop by drop, the bucket fills, and I'm carried toward the next stage. There's a lot of joy in surrendering and letting go of control, of relaxing the effort, of knowing there's something greater than myself at work. There is a refuge from the thinking mind, the clinging personality, and from worldly conditions. But there are obstacles. There are obstacles to joy. Sometimes the eight worldly winds feel so strong. Gain and loss, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute, also called status and disgrace. Sometimes these conditions are such that we are more sensitive to attachments to gain, or attachments to pleasure, or to praise, or to fame, or to status. Or we're caught in fear of loss, or fear of pain, or fear of blame or disgrace. And we can feel like we're back at the beginning of the path, like the ox herder when he started out with the searing flames and darting daggers. When we feel trapped in sorrow and dread, despair, powerlessness, or traumatic memories, what do we do? There isn't an answer, there's no one answer. I don't have the answer. But we have to acknowledge, as Ajahn Sumedho says, this too. We can ask, can there be love for this too? Which Rodney, our founding teacher, sometimes asks. And we can answer, not now. Sometimes we have to answer, not now. I think we can we might find some help with the paramis, which we studied 2 years ago. We can try metta sometimes, we can try resolve, for example, or maybe patience, and we can find some help from the refuges, especially the Sangha. And we can also remember that there are many kinds of joy if we're looking. Joy can have very subtle forms. I know when I started out on this Buddhist path, when I decided to sign up for the Introduction to Meditation class, because I was filled with worry and catastrophic thinking about someone I loved dearly, I saw that my heart was very tender, and that made me feel more connected to other people at the same time that I was suffering deeply. Tenderness, connection, and caring. Yes, being present with those is turning in the right direction. So as Lindell said, we need to be open and have a broad definition of joy. And remember the yin and yang, that it's all connected. So that's my talk on Pamoja today. Thank you for being here to hear it. And it's a time where we can discuss Pamoja, joy, in be open to all aspects of joy, and how it enters your path of practice in your life. How it helps propel you towards awakening. So we'll have a whole group discussion today, because last week we had breakout groups, and we've been at this for, you know, most of the month. So I'm thinking you have things that you'd like to share. And I want to remind you before we start our discussion that we want to respect everyone's and respect ourselves, because each of our sharings is really teaching others, and we all learn from each other. So it's a wonderful thing to share. And also to that this is a safe space. We don't repeat what we hear here. And we're all really here for the same reason. And we have a lot in common. And so we're going to keep what we share confidential. And I hope you will want to share today. So, if you need to leave, you can do that, of course, but I hope many of you will stay. So, who would like to start us off? Joy. You can think back when you started off, faith. And think about suffering. Julie, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for the talk. There were so many great nuggets of wisdom in there. And I just wanted to latch on to the whole idea that joy can manifest in so many different ways. It can mean so many different things. And you know, I'm one of these people that certainly, especially at certain times in my life, you know, just the idea of joy and being bubbly, happy, you know, was not part of my reality whatsoever. But being able to think of joy as just a deep peace in the heart and how that feels is, I think, a real valuable thing. I appreciate the fact that we're all here, and we all, like you said, we all learn from each other too. So lots of gratitude. Just wanted to share that. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie. Judith.
Yeah, what I've been thinking about a lot was Setting an intention to find the joy that is always available, especially since I just talked about that a few weeks ago and said joy was always available. And this week I was planning a trip for a very complicated trip that involves many, many people and all sorts of things. And I have to say, planning a trip is not high on my list of things I like to do. Kind of right below doing my taxes, I decided. And by the end of the day, I was just in the most sour mood. And it was like I found myself fretting about packing for this trip that is 5 months away. And I said, wait a minute, wait a minute. Where is joy? Didn't I set this intention? Where is it? And I just sat with it for a while and, felt all the nasty feelings that I was feeling. And then all of a sudden it did start to transform. And I started, thinking about these dear friends I'm going to see, and just the whole positive side of it. And it was there. It was there. I was just not in touch with it. So, yeah, so I think that having that intention is really important for me.
Thank you, Judith, very much. It reminds me of something I was thinking about saying in this talk, but I didn't, which was I have a weakness with irritation. I don't like to make mistakes and I get irritated when I drop something or I don't know, I just get irritated. And when I'm irritated, I think about people saying, well, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And at that moment, I want to be right. I don't want to be happy. I'm like thinking, no, I just want to be irritated and I just want to be right. I don't want to be. But then I do the same thing because it isn't really, then I just kind of think, really? I really want that. I want rather than being happy. And so then I open to the availability and it really is a much better place to be. So, who else? I see some people smiling, so there must be some more joy around here. Hi, Andy. Thank you.
Hello, good
Okay.
morning. I was kind of hesitant because my thoughts are not fully like baked this morning, but I keep hyper fixating on that statement, like having the intention but doing nothing. I'm finding myself getting really, I think, overwhelmed with how many avenues of joy, whether internally, externally, I can integrate into my life and find. And I'm seeing myself, I think it's like subconsciously like attaching in that way versus accepting. So, I don't know kind of what that looks like moving forward, but just like I keep drawing myself back to kind of like looking at the bigger picture of it versus hyperfixating, I guess. So anyway.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's one thing about sharing is that we don't have to have everything all formed. It's a process. We're just opening. So appreciate that, Andy. Nikhil, go ahead.
So this past week I started work at a new job, and my previous job ended about 2 months ago, and I was able to kind of, take 60 days to, with my before my new job starts, just kind of almost like just relax and live my life. And during this period, it felt like all the external conditions in my life were just kind of like really easy. There was not really much stress. There wasn't really, much difficulty, and a lot of the things that I'm practicing with were just they weren't really necessarily like coming up, right? And it was kind of this easy period. And then when work started, it was kind of like all these things that I struggle with in work were kind of like right back there, like immediately, like the first day. And I think this was something I'd heard, Rodney talk about. I can't remember when, but kind of like being in your head or kind of like being in your heart a little bit. And something I kind of noticed was that, all the stress and tension, whenever, all the suffering that's kind of like taking place, when I'm in my head, I'm not really able to kind of like notice that, right? I'm just like in it, I'm experiencing it. And when I notice almost what I'm feeling in my chest. So like, it feels like, whether it's like heart rate, whether it's like kind of like tightness, it feels like all of that is more just like simply, it's just more simple over there, if that makes sense. And if I'm able to just notice that and just kind of like be in my heart as opposed to my head, there's almost this tranquility where all of that is still present, but I'm able to kind of just like see that and accept it a little bit more. And it's not the all the nuances or details of what's in my head. It's just this the sensation almost. And there's almost kind of like a joy and a relaxation, just kind of like being able to get there and kind of notice that. So that's been something that's been kind of helpful for me this past week. If it's hard to kind of notice when I'm in that state, but when I do notice it, I'm able to kind of just take a step back from it almost. And I kind of just see like it all kind of feels like it manifests in kind of like the heart and kind of chest and and that kind of just like that area of the body a little bit, and kind of noticing it and being able to be there is kind of, yeah, there's a little bit of joy there.
Yes, definitely, Nikhil. You can see other people resonating with that. In fact, I was thinking myself that I remember being really stressed, like you're talking about, and feeling my heart was like really stressed. I can't take this, like it's too much. And I had the image of this little paper heart, like a Valentine heart. And then I suddenly had this image of a big organic heart, like you would see if you dissected, open heart surgery. And I thought, boy, that heart isn't like a paper heart. It's really, really strong and flexible and can handle a lot. And that's what I thought of when you were saying that, how strong the heart really is if you open the heart, it can. And I think with the parts that were bubbling up by other people, they acknowledge that too. I mean, I think this is one of the greatest truths of Buddhism, of the Dhamma, about the heart. Thank you very much for sharing that. Would anybody else like to share about their joy? Or their difficulty finding joy. I mean, there are obstacles too. Suze, go ahead.
I really appreciated your talking about the joy of the different stages of your path. And it made me reflect on two things. One was the very first retreat I went to, where just there was this overwhelming sense of having come home. That this, it was like the search was over. It's like the Oxfording guy went from just seeing the footsteps to something else, and I didn't know about the Oxfording pictures then. And then the second thing, which has happened to me now for years, ever since I think I heard Philip say it, when the Dharma does you, when there's this moment that of skillfulness, wholesomeness that comes out without me having planned it. It's just like it comes and there's just this like, oh my goodness, it's working and it's there and I'm more inclined that way than the other. It's like, this story I've shared about stinginess filling my being. But then acting from generosity without doing a lot of thinking or planning it out. So I really appreciate focusing on all those steps in the path. And there is so much joy there. Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you, Suze. Phil.
Hi. Yeah, I appreciate all this discussion about the subtleties of joy because I'm kind of a glass half empty kind of a person at baseline, and sometimes the word joy itself is like a barrier for me. And so, kind of leaning into these other aspects of it or different ways of approaching it are really helpful, like calmness or contentment, that kind of thing. But what what I really wanted to ask the group and is, you know, I've been meditating for a long time, and I can definitely experience a deep sense of peace and just a beautiful sensation of stillness. And that's how I'm connecting with this discussion. But sometimes it can feel like I get stuck there. There was a part in your talk, Lauren, about when you experience this deep sense of joy, then, you know, when you're in your sitting, when you just sit, when you just be present, I guess is a better way to put it, is then the whole of the Dharma will be revealed. And so I can get to a place of deep peace and contentment, but sometimes it feels like it doesn't go anywhere, I guess. Like it's just like, huh, I wonder what else is there. Am I not trying hard enough? Am I not sitting long enough? Am I, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm just kind of curious how other people approach that.
Yeah. Who would like to respond to Phil? Anybody? Go ahead, Julia. Julie.
You might enjoy looking into the Anapanasati approach of meditation. There's a really good book called Breathing Like a Buddha, which Lauren actually recommended to me, by Ajahn Suchito, that I found really helpful. There's peace and there's also projects.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah, I would, I think that's a good idea now that I think of it, because of course I've been practicing with Anapanasati too, and it does seem to really be going somewhere, you know, like it unfolds. So it doesn't feel like I'm just in one place. One thing opens to another. And also, I know when I talked to Rodney about the path, he says that to be seeking the truth, because his thing is the truth. He really is into the truth. And he says to keep saying, can there be love for this? And then just keep going to the most unacceptable aspects of oneself. Can there be love for this too? Can there be love for this too? So there's a real, getting penetrating. You know, well, what's underneath this? So even when you say, is this all there is, you know, in your meditation, you can ask a question, you know, like, why am I stuck here? Or what's underneath this? Or can I accept this? Can I love this? You know, there's investigation. Yeah. It isn't a dead end. I mean, as far as we know about the Dhamma, there's no end. And Rodney says, you just keep learning. He says, even if you're awakened, you're going to still keep learning. That's what he says. So, anybody else? Yes, Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm responding to what Phil, the person that Phil raised. And I think what it makes me think about, Phil, is that, I mean, the looking for joy could turn into an attachment. It's like I'm getting better at looking for joy and I want it, you know, it becomes a want for me. Now it starts sort of backfiring because it becomes a want, because attached and you're unhappy, you're not finding what you're looking for in this case. So I guess my thinking on that issue is that I definitely see in my practice, I'm better. And when I look for joy, I'm finding joy more deeply, more broadly than I was able to, let's say 10 years ago. That's a freeing, it's a wonderful thing. But I guess there are situations where you might not have joy. I mean, you might not be finding it. You're really frustrated. You might be hurt. know, it's just not there. And so being with that, I guess, is what the Dharma teaches us, being with whatever is here. And if you're not attached to it being joyful, you might just be with what is, and joy might come back when it returns in that way. So that would be my take on it. But I'm curious about what other things about that issue.
Thank you. Nikhil.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I feel what you share, kind of like a connection to that a lot too. And even earlier during today's sit, actually, and you know, during the talk itself, where sometimes it just feels like awareness and mindfulness is hard to access for me. And I'm oftentimes not aware that it's hard for me to access. And so it almost turns into this, trying to incorporate all these various parts, you know, all these various, you know, aspects of mindfulness that I've practiced in the past to try and bring awareness to the moment, whether it's, you know, let me try to have awareness of my thoughts. Let me try having awareness of my breath. Let me try to remember, okay, this is just what this is like right now, but none of it is really, really sticking. And I think sometimes what I realize is that I'm sort of just trying to fight against what is present and like what's been just like present in my current state of mind. And if I just realized right now, it's hard for me to have awareness. There's almost just this relaxation around this is what this moment feels like. It's not something I can almost like practice my way into. It's just almost more of a realizing that I'm almost like realizing the effort that I'm almost bringing to my awareness and to my mindfulness. And when I kind of realize that and kind of just notice, well, right now, this is how it is. There's the relaxation and almost a kind of like a joy in just that. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I think, yeah, it's almost kind of like Thomas, what you were saying, where there's sometimes this craving or this clinging for how I want it to be, how I want the or how I think the moment should be, and I'm not even aware of it. And yeah, when I realize that this is just how it is, maybe it's hard right now, or maybe it's just this is where my mind is right now, then it almost just like it's like I think like Lauren, what you had mentioned of like the kind of like what you were pointing to in your talk of like you can't actively do it. It kind of just arises. It rises naturally, and I feel like that's sort of been a way for me to at least access that natural rising sometimes.
Yeah. I really like that we're having a dialogue, that people are kind of, you know, investigating together as a group. Suze, go ahead. You're muted, Suze.
There we go. I wanted to say thank you, first of all, Phil, for just your sharing and the honesty with, you know, that you're a glass half empty kind of guy. I'm a glass not only half full, but kind of overflowing, which is a little bit delusional. And I've been very attached to that image of myself. So wait a second. Joy just comes like that to me. What's going on, kind of thing. And so your sharing made me realize that I've been looking at, well, how attached am I to this image of myself? I'm a person where the glass is half full. And it's been instructive as I've been kind of peeling that away some. And I offer that back to you as maybe something also to look at. And well, wait a second, this is how I respond to the world. This is how I respond to the moment. It's been helpful. And maybe exploring that a little bit might be also, who knows what you'll learn from that.
We still have a few more minutes. Yes, go ahead, Lillian.
Thanks. I appreciated your talk, Lauren, and I think this topic is interesting for me. I think last week I shared in my small group about how it kind of my inclination around joy and the Dharma, I think initially might have been that like that doesn't really have a place here because we're serious here and we're really getting down to the business of like getting enlightened, and you know, you gotta do it right, otherwise you're not gonna be doing it. So I think over the few years, I think that has started to fall away, but I think that's still just like a framework in my mind. I think another framework that I'm noticing today is that like, I think I confuse satisfying cravings with joy. And so I think if I satisfy that craving, then I'm really, really going to be happy. Like it's really going to happen and the joy will be there. And I think it's something I hadn't even really thought about much as far as like, how I relate to cravings. So I think this topic this month is, I don't know, just kind of opening things up in a new way for me. And I think the other thing, I mentioned it last week, but our daughter is two, and she just has a lot of joy. And like, of course she has the full range of human experience, but she also just like wants to hold hands with everyone. And she just like has this like innate, like openness and sociability and kindness. And it's also kind of interesting to see the ways in which she also has like kind of developed her own formations around things, even at this young age. But today I'm thinking of all the ways that she's just sort of like blissfully joyful, and it just kind of like inspires me a lot. So I wanted to bring that up too.
Yes. Thank you for adding that to our Sangha. She's part of our Sangha, and the aspiration of others, you know, we're inspired by others. So thank you for reminding us of that two-year-old exuberance. Carol, did you have your hand up, Carol? No. Yes? Well, you're muted. So if you did want to say something.
Well, I think Faith is next. So.
Oh, Faith. Where's Faith?
Faith, yeah.
I don't have, where are you, Faith? Go ahead, Faith. You start talking, and then I'll know where you are.
Okay. Well, it's short, and I was listening to what Suze and Phil said, and I lean toward identifying as a joyful person. I have in the past identified as an anxious person, and then I'm trying to cling to that identity, and the joy. One of the joys of being old is all that stuff is kind of falling apart a little bit. And I am happier than I used to be. But it's not an identity. It's just what's happening in this moment. It can turn on a dime, right? And I feel a lot of joy in that. Loosening the hold on I am this way, or somebody else mentioned I have to do this correctly, you know, I have to be a Buddhist now, whatever the heck it is, just loosening the hold on all that and living life in the moment and opening my heart to it. So that's, I'm just experiencing that. I'm a long time meditator, but I don't know half of what you said about Buddhist terminology. And I'm good with that. I don't have to know stuff either. Right? Just another joy. Anyway, I'm done.
Thank you, Faith. Thank you. I want to just apologize to Lori because I said, I recognize you, Lori, now. I'm sorry. I said I didn't, you look new, but I know you. So I just wanted to apologize. Nice to see you. Okay, well, thank you, everyone who has shared. Oh, somebody else?
Carol.
Boy, I'm not seeing everybody. Carol. Oh, it's Carol's turn. Yes.
Am I?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Well, I really appreciated what everybody is sharing. I was given the middle name of Joy at birth, and sometimes people will say, well, Killjoy. And now I'm really appreciate having been given that middle name. And one of the things that I do is on our walks, there's this wonderful Western red cedar tree with an old-fashioned swing hanging to it. And so the owner of it allows me to swing in it. And it's just wonderful to swing and to send metta out into the universe. And that is one thing that gives me great joy.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for that image. I love that. Boy, I think we've had a joyful discussion today, and I thank everybody who heard it and shared it. Hearing is sharing anyway. There was a lot of sharing going on. Very nice. Okay, so it's time to close. I don't think anybody has their hand up. And now I would like to offer merit for our practice by sending metta out, and I'm going to use a metta sharing that Sue shared on last Monday, which comes from Philip Moffat, because it's a wonderful metta. May all beings know love, joy, wonder in this life, just as it is. Thank you, everybody. Hope to see you next week. Have a nice week.